was play a song. So let me see if I can share my screen. Okay, see what happens next. Ah, it's not working. Oh, wait, I know what I can do. I can just disconnect it and use my, hold on.
Or I could play the song.
No, I know what's wrong. This is called user error.
Okay, so
the mouse, you know, the mouse doesn't have a particular shape to it. It was upside down. So when I thought I was moving this way, I was actually moving this way. I think I can control it now. Yep, it works much better now. Okay. Well, you know, actually, that's a great lead into the song I picked today, because the song I picked is the laughing song. You ready?
As I was coming around the corner, I heard some people say, "Here comes the dandy doctor, here he comes this way. His heel is like a snowplow, his mouth is like a trap, and when he opens it gently, you will see a fearful gap." And then I laughed. I could study a room, Larry. I got study a room, Larry. They said his mother was a princess, his father was a prince, and it's been the apple of their eye, had not been a coin. But he'll be the king of that turn, sweet by and by. And when I heard them say it, why, I laughed until I cried, and then I laughed. I got that hell from there. I got Daddy heard from Larry. So now, kind friend, just listen to what I'm going to say. I've tried my best to please you with my simple little lay. And now, whether you think it's funny or a quiet bit of chaff, why, all I'm going to do is just go in this little laugh, and then I laugh. I could not hear from Larry. I got Danny Earl from Larry.
That's a very old song. One place says it's from 1891, and the other one says it's from 1898. So that is a very, very old recording, but it's kind of fun to listen to every now and then, even though I can't quite make out all the words, you know, because the recording is so scratchy. I still enjoy listening to it. So thanks for listening with me. I'm halfway tempted to show you another one of my favorite songs. Okay, I will. That I listen to every now and then. This one you'll be able to hear a lot better. Okay, let me pull it up before I start this thing, though, because when I start this thing, it's hard to search YouTube. So here it is. This song, I think you guys will probably all know. This is one of my favorite songs, and you would be surprised how often I sing this song to myself. Quite a bit, actually. So here we go.
Yes, honey. It happened on one of them zippity-doo-dah days. Now, that's the kind of day when you can't open your mouth without a song jump right out of it. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-dah. My, oh, my, what a wonderful day. Plenty of sunshine heading my way. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-dah. Mr. Bluebird's on my shoulder. It's the truth. It's actual. Everything is satisfactual. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-ay. Wonderful feeling, wonderful day.
zippity-doo-da, zippity-yay. My, oh my, what a wonderful day.
Oh, plenty of sunshine in the wind. Zippity-doo-da,
Mr. Bluebird's on my shoulder. It's the truth, it's actual. Everything is satisfaction. Zippity-doo-da, zippity-yay. Wonderful feeling, feeling this way. Zoom, 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 zoom.
It's a pretty long song, so I decided to go ahead and stop it. But I'll tell you what, it got me started. Like, I want to show you the next song in that little genre, but I'll resist. But the next song is You Can't Roller Skate in a Buffalo Herd. You guys know that song? One person only? Roger Miller, right? Roger Miller? Okay, we got to look at it then. Since you guys don't know it, we have to look at it. So let me search for it. Roger Miller. Here you go. You Can't Roller Skate. This is a short song, so we can listen to it. Hold on, let me share. And when we're done, I'll say, what do these three songs have in common? We'll play Sesame Street. Here we go.
You can't roller skate in a buffalo herd. Roller skate in a buffalo herd. You can't roller skate in a buffalo herd. But you can be happy if you've mine too. You can't take a shower in a parakeet cage. You can't take a shower in a parakeet cage. You can't take a shower in a parakeet cage. But you can be happy if you've mine too. All you gotta do is put your mind to it. Knuckle down, buckle down, do it, do it, do it. Well, you can't go swimming in a baseball pool. You can't go swimming in a baseball pool. You can't go baseball pool, but you can be happy if you've a mind to. You can't change film with a kid on your back. Can't change film with a kid on your back. Can't change film with a kid on your back. But you can be happy if you've a mind to. You can't drive around with a tiger in your car. You can't drive around with a tiger in your car. You can't drive around with a tiger in your car. But you can be happy if you've a mind to. All you gotta do is put your mind to it. Knuckle down, buckle down, do it, do it, do it. Well, you can't roller skate in the buffalo herd. You can't roller skate in the buffalo herd. You can't roller skate in the buffalo herd. But you can be happy if you've a mind to. You can't go fishing in a watermelon patch. You can't go fishing in a watermelon patch. You can't go fishing in a watermelon patch. But you can be happy if you've a mind to. You can't roller skate in the buffalo herd. You can't roller skate in the buffalo herd. You can't roller skate in the buffalo herd.
Okay, let me turn on my chat. Oh, I have my chat on. So what did those songs have in common? Yeah, we choose to be happy. Happiness is a choice. That's exactly what all three of those songs had in common. Yeah, and two of those songs have been favorite songs of mine since I was about 3 years old. So, hey, Ruby, yeah. Hope everything's going well with you. You've been on my mind because of what you're going through with your sister, so it's good to see you. All right, so why don't we go ahead and get started. We're looking at the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And I'm on page 94. And what I confess to you all, although I think we're finding some useful information in this chapter, what I confess to you all is that this chapter is not my favorite chapter in the book. And the reason it's not is because there's a whole lot of talk about where the spiritual heart is located. That's a question that doesn't have a truthful answer to it, you know, so it's not my favorite chapter, but we're going through the whole book and we are finding some useful stuff. So let's just continue with it and see what comes up for us next. So I'm starting about halfway down the page on page 94 with this question. Sri Bhagavan says, that I intuitively know the position of the heart in the physical body. And Ramana Maharshi says, why not? And the man says, to me, whoops, I gotta turn this down again. To me personally, that Bhagavan is referring to? And Bhagavan says, yes, that's it, that's intuition. Because the man pointed right here, which is where Bhagavan had been telling him it was, right? Two fingers to the right of the center. When he said, you mean me? I have intuition? Bhagavan took that as, he said, yes, right there. See, that's intuition. You knew right where to point. I just want to comment, though, that that is probably more cultural than intuition, but it's an interesting cultural idea to contemplate. I used to live in Japan. And when I lived in Japan, when people would say me, instead of pointing here, I guess in India they point there. I tend to point here in America. I don't know where you guys point me. I kind of point right here. You mean me? Can you think about where you point? It's more towards the center, right? And when I lived in Japan, they did this. Me? They pointed at the nose. Me? So I don't know that that was as much intuition as a cultural pointing. And again, this chapter is not my favorite chapter because there's some stuff going on here that really doesn't have a lot to do with truth. But we'll continue reading and see what we find. So Ramana Maharshi says, yes, that is the intuition. How did you refer to yourself by gesture just now? Did you not put your finger on the right side of the chest? That is exactly the place of the heart center. And the devotee says, so then, in the absence of direct knowledge of the heart center, I have to depend on this intuition? And I think that's kind of a funny response. I don't know what's going on in this particular individual's mind, but and I don't really even know why Ramana Maharshi is engaged in this conversation, to be honest. We recently saw the questions about the irrelevant questions, and that the sage should ignore them. And there's certainly plenty of stories about Ramana Maharshi ignoring certain questions that were put to him. So I'm not sure that day what got into him, why he's engaging in this conversation. But it seems to me that maybe, I have to put a big fat maybe in here because I don't know. Maybe the reason that the devotee is saying, so then in the absence of direct knowledge of the heart center, I have to depend on this intuition. Maybe the reason he's asking is that his intuition is actually telling him that wasn't intuition, right? That was just a habit of pointing. Me? You're talking to me? And again, if that had been a Japanese person, it would have been, me? Are you talking to me? And who wants to call a habit intuition, right? So again, the devotee says, in the absence of direct knowledge of the heart center, I have to depend on this intuition. And Ramana Maharshi says, what is wrong with it? When a schoolboy says, it is I who did the sum correctly, or when he asks you, shall I run and get the book for you? Would he point to the head that did the sum correctly, or to the legs that will carry him swiftly to get you the book? No, in both cases, his finger is pointed quite naturally toward the right side of the chest, thus giving innocent expression to the profound truth that the source of I-ness in him is there. It is an unerring intuition that makes him refer to himself, to the heart which is the self, in that way. The act is quite involuntary and universal. That is to say, it is the same in the case of every individual. What stronger proof than this do you require about the position of the heart center in the physical body? I'm tempted to share another video, but it's not a happy song. Let me see if I can find it. Problem is, I don't know the name of it. And so I may not be able to find it. I would love, love, love to share it. Let me try this. No, I'm not going to be able to share it. Maybe I'll find it before next week and share it. But it's a Gary Weber video that you guys have watched. It was in Gentle Healing, I think, year two. And it's where he has you find where you think awareness is in your body. He has you cut the body in half in your imagination, of course. And he asked you, is awareness in the top half? If you cut the body in half at the waistline, is awareness in the top half or is awareness in the bottom half? And of course, most people say it's in the top half of the body. So then I think he has you cut a line right across here, like from one shoulder to the other shoulder, and asks you, okay, we know it's in the top half of the body, but where is awareness now? Is it above this line or is it below this line? And some people will say below the line, people that are probably very emotional. Most people, however, being thinkers, will say it's above the line. And he continues to cut things up. Like if you say it's above the line, he then, he'll cut the head in half down across the nose through the mouth. And he asks you, okay, which side is awareness on? And if you are so bold as to pick a side, he'll then dissect that side of the head. And he keeps getting to the point to help you realize that awareness isn't actually located inside your body. That's just a thought. That's just a belief. It's a great video. So what I will do is see if I can find it. It's in Gentle Healing Year 2, I think. So I should be able to search and find it there. But I think that would be an appropriate video to show pertaining to this conversation, because I don't want anybody to form a belief that because Ramana Maharshi said that awareness is located two fingers to the right of the center, that's where it is, because it's just not true. It's just not true. What you could do, if you wanted to, if you really are lost on what awareness is you could focus on the heart wherever you perceive it to be. And again, I always perceive the spiritual heart to be in the center, right? But you could focus on the heart wherever you perceive it to be and really allow the feelings of the heart to kind of come alive and just kind of watch them, pay attention to them. But then start asking, what's aware of this? And you'll find that awareness is not in those feelings of the heart, right? Awareness is aware of those feelings of the heart. But you could do that with anything. I mean, you could do that with, I've had you guys do it before with pinching your finger and feeling the pain, right? And then asking, what's aware of this pain? You know, so any access point in the body, you could feel your feet against the floor and sit there and really feel your feet. And if you pay attention to your feet, they become more and more and more alive, just like the spiritual heart does. You could really enjoy those feelings. The feet can feel quite nice. And then ask, what's aware of the feet? And most people do mistakenly place awareness of the head, you know, where the Japanese point, right? that's where they mistake it. So you can sit and watch that for a bit. Watch the feelings in the head. Watch the feeling that maybe awareness is there. You know, notice all the sensations of the head. Then ask, wait a minute, what's aware of this? You know, whether you're looking at your heart, whether you're looking at your feet, whether you're looking at your head, you'll notice that you can see the edges of the sensation that you're looking at. You know, if you close your eyes now and look at either the heart, the feet, or the head, there are sensations there. It's funny, my heart and my head are competing right now for attention. They're both like getting really strong. But if you close your eyes and focus on one, and again, the feet are another option, the sensations will get very strong. The longer you focus on it, the stronger they'll get. But notice, no matter how active the sensation gets, you can find the edge of it. You can kind of feel the edge of it. And you're aware beyond it. For instance, you can actually be aware of your head, your heart, your feet at the same time. So how could awareness be contained within any of those? Right? Awareness has to be bigger. It's more on the outside. That's just kind of an example. We went within to find it, but then it's more on the outside. And the body is within awareness, right? So let me go back. Again, Ramana Maharshi said that when a schoolboy says he added correctly, or he won't point to his head, he'll point to his heart. When he says, "Do you want me to go get the book?" he won't point to his legs, he'll point to his heart. And he says, "What stronger proof than this do you require about the position of the heart in the physical body?" And the devotee says, "But I have heard it said by a saint that his spiritual experience is felt at the place between the eyebrows." You know, people call that the spiritual eye, right? Ramana Maharshi says, "As I said previously, that is the ultimate and perfect realization which transcends subject-object relation. When that is achieved, it does not matter where the experience is felt." So now Ramana Maharshi is returning to what his true teachings are, you know, that really the true self is not located in the heart. It's not located in the head. But just like Eckhart Tolle teaches focusing on the inner body for beginners, you know, Ramana Maharshi could teach focusing on this feeling of the heart for beginners, and this other teacher could teach focusing on the spiritual eye for beginners, right? But ultimately, that's just to get people used to being still and focused. It's not true to say that's where the self is. Let's see what Patty says. "I have PDFs with excerpts of talks with Ramana from the 1935. He says at that time, yes, the position in the physical body is irrelevant." Exactly. That's where we're getting to the truth. So, you know, there used to be a time, it doesn't happen for me anymore, but there used to be a time when I would go to meditate, my hands would really light up. And so as a beginning meditator, I could set and focus on the sensations in my hands as a starting point, right? To still the mind. Instead of sitting there looking at thinking, I'm looking at the feeling in my hands. But the only purpose of that is really to quiet the mind. But then I need to look and see what is aware of this. I need to start looking for the formless self. The devotee says, "But the question is, which is the correct view of the two? Namely, that the center of spiritual experience is the place between the eyebrows, or that it is the heart." Ramana Maharshi says, "For the purposes of practice, you may concentrate between the eyebrows. It would then be bhavana, or imaginative contemplation of the mind. Whereas the supreme state, realization, with which you become wholly identified, and in which your individuality is completely dissolved, transcends the mind. Then there can be no objectified center to the experience by you as a subject distinct and separate from it." So again, what I hear Ramana Maharshi saying is, "Look, if you want to focus on the spot between the eyebrows, go ahead. If you like that better, go ahead. You know, you can do that. But when you really realize what the truth is, you're going to find that it's not located anywhere in the body, right?" The devotee says, "I would like to put my question in slightly different words. Can the place between the eyebrows be said to be the seat of the self?" Ramana Maharshi says, "You accept that the self is the ultimate source of consciousness and that it subsists equally during all the three states of mind, meaning when you're awake, consciousness is present. When you're dreaming, consciousness is present. And when you're in deep sleep, consciousness is present. But see what happens when a person in meditation is overcome by sleep. As the first symptom of sleep, his head begins to nod. And you've all felt that, right? Everybody's done that, right? You're meditating, all of a sudden you feel that. You feel that jerk. As the first symptom of sleep, his head begins to nod, which, however, could not happen if the self were situated between the eyebrows or at any other place in the head. If during sleep the experience of the self is not felt between the eyebrows, that center cannot be called its seat, without implying that the self often forsakes its own place, which is absurd. I need to look up a couple Hindu words here. Okay, the fact is the spiritual aspirant may have his experience at any center or chakra on which he concentrates his mind. But for that reason, that particular place of his experience does not become ispo facto the seat of the self. So, you know, I hear Ramana Maharshi kind of repeating the same thing over and over again, although the devotee seems to want to keep asking about it. What I hear Ramana Maharshi saying is that none of these places are the seat of the self. No place physical is the seat of the self. But any of these places may be used as a beginning point for your concentration. And, you know, I do choose a beginning point for my concentration every time I meditate. With my current level of immaturity, if I were to just to close my eyes and not choose a beginning point for my concentration, just close my eyes, I'd probably be lost in thought. So the purpose of choosing a beginning place for my concentration is to remove attention from thought and place it somewhere else so that it becomes quiet and still prior to beginning the inquiry, prior to beginning the awareness, watching awareness. And I choose different things randomly. Sometimes I listen to like a brief 30-minute, well, actually most of the audios, I have a couple audios that I play sometimes which have a lot of guidance in them, but most of the audios I choose, only the first 5 minutes is really guidance. And then every 10 minutes for the first 30 minutes, it will repeat the guidance, and then the video stops. But what happens when I close my eyes and I listen to that first 5 minutes of guidance, I'm tuning my attention into the guidance that I'm hearing from the audio rather than my thoughts. And then since in the first 30 minutes that guidance is repeated every 10 minutes, if I happen to wander off into thought, when that guidance comes in from the audio again, it reminds me and brings me back. And by the time I've gone through a 30-minute audio like that, I am fully concentrated. And I'm no longer getting lost in thought. Sometimes I just listen to the sounds of the environment, whatever the sounds of the environment are. It doesn't matter what the sounds of the environment are. In fact, I love that because a lot of people think they need a quiet environment. You don't need a quiet environment. A dump truck is just fine to focus on, you know, if that's what happens to be outside. You just turn your attention to the dump truck. And if the dump truck drives off and then you hear a bird, you turn your attention to the bird. And then where I often get to meditate in La Vida, I can hear the creek. I can turn my attention to the creek. You know, maybe I'll hear a neighbor starting up his car. I can turn my attention to that. But as I turn my attention to the different sounds and just listen to them, I'm not thinking. And that heightens my concentration. Or sometimes I turn my attention to sensations in the body. And I've never ever picked a particular center and said, that's where I'm always going to start. Like, I don't ever, I mean, I may sometimes start with the heart. I may sometimes start with the feet. I may sometimes start with, you know, feelings in the head. I may sometimes start with feelings in the neck. And I just, when I close my eyes and I open up to the sensations, just whatever captures my attention. Yeah. And then I just kind of focus on it and pay attention to it. And again, the real purpose of choosing a starter place for your concentration is just to extract your attention from thought. Extract that habitual outgoing to thought. Place your attention somewhere else. Once there's this feeling that the concentration is good and that the mind is still, then I shift to awareness, watching awareness, right? Because that's really the goal, not watching the heart or watching the hands or watching, listening to the birds. I very, 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 very rarely use music because I find that once I get past the beginning where I'm tuning in concentration, I find the music actually kind of distracts me. The reason music distracts me is music can be very emotional. And so what will happen is as the music changes, the mind wants to play with the music. It wants to kind of imagine things, you know. So I almost never use music. And if I did use music, I would probably use something that's like 15, 20 minutes long, and that's it. Again, just to concentrate on the music, listen to the music, and then let the music go out and be in silence. I don't want anything that's going to engage my imagination. And at least for me, music does that. So I don't like to use music too much. So again, the fact is the spiritual aspirant may have his experience at any center or chakra on which he concentrates his mind. But for that reason, that particular place of his experience does not become ipso facto the seat of the self. And now Ramana Maharshi is going to tell a story. Kabir was intensely devoted to Sri Rama, and he never failed to feed those who sang the praise of the Lord of his devotion. On one occasion, however, it so happened that he had not the wherewithal to provide food for such a gathering of devotees. For him, however, there could be no alternative except that he must somehow make every necessary arrangement before the next morning. So he and his son set out at night to secure the required provisions. The story goes that after the father and son had removed the provisions from a merchant's house through a hole they made in the wall, the son went in again just to wake up the household and tell them, as a matter of principle, that their house had been burglarized. When, having roused the household, the boy tried to make good his escape through the hole and join his father on the other side, his body stuck up the aperture. He got stuck. To avoid being identified by the pursuing household, because if detected, there would be no feeding at all of the devotees the next day, he called out to his father and told him, to sever his head and take it away with him. That done, Kabir made good his escape with the stolen provisions and the son's head, which on reaching home was hidden away from possible detection. The next day, Kabir gave a feast to the devotees, quite unmindful of what had happened the previous night. If it is Rama's will, said Kabir to himself, that my son should die, may it prevail. In the evening, Kabir, with the party, set out as usual in procession into the town with devotion, etc. Meanwhile, the burglared householder made report to the king, producing the truncated body of Kamal, which gave them no clue. In order to secure its identification, the king had the body tied up prominently on the highway so that whoever claimed it or took it away, for no dead body is forsaken without the last rites being given to it by the kith and kin, so that whoever claimed it or took it away might be interrogated or arrested by the police, who were posted secretly for the purpose. Kabir and his party with the devotionals in full swing came by the highway when, to the astonishment of all, Kamal's truncated body, which was considered dead as a doornail, began to clap its hands, marking time to the tune sung by the devotional party. This story disproves the suggestion that the head, or the place between the eyebrows, is the seat of the self. It may also be noted that when in the battlefield, the head of a soldier in action is severed from the body by a sudden and powerful stroke of the sword, the body continues to run or move its limbs as in a mock fight just for a while before it finally falls down dead. And of course, I've seen chickens do that too. You know, my grandma lived on a farm and we would go stay with her on weekends and she'd go out and chop off the head of the chicken that we were going to eat for lunch. And it would run all over the barnyard. But again, I don't want anybody putting any meaning into any of this. I don't know how else to say that even as I continue to read. I don't want anybody to believe that the seat of the self is found in a particular place within the body. And in fact, Ramana Maharshi himself has said it is not. So exactly why he would go on to then tell the story and make this point, I cannot say. I cannot say. The devotee says, but Kamal's body was dead hours before. Ramana Maharshi says, what you call death is really no extraordinary experience for Kamal. Here is the story of what had happened when he was younger still. As a boy, Kamal had a friend of equal age with whom he used to play games of marbles, etc. A general rule they observed between themselves was that if one of them owed the other a game or two, the same should be redeemed the next day. One evening they parted with a game to the credit of Kamal. Next day, in order to claim the return of the game, Kamal went to the boy's house where he saw the boy laid on the veranda while his relatives were weeping beside him. What is the matter? Kamal asked them. He played with me last evening and also owes me a game. The relatives wept all the more, saying that the boy was dead. No, said Kamal, he is not dead, but merely pretends to be so, just to evade redeeming the game he owes me. The relatives protested, asking Kamal to see for himself that the boy was really dead, that the body was cold and stiff. But all this is a mere pretension of the boy, I know. So what if the body is stiff and cold? I too can become like that. So saying, Kamal laid himself down and in the twinkling of an eye was dead. The poor relatives who were weeping till then for the death of their own boy were distressed and dismayed and now began to weep for Kamal's death also. But up rose Kamal, declaring, do you see it now? I was, as you would say, dead, but I am up again, alive and kicking. This is how he wants to deceive me, but he cannot elude me like this with his pretensions. In the end, the story goes, Kamal's inherent saintliness gave life to the dead boy, and Kamal got back the game that was due to him. The moral is that the death of the body is not the extinction of the self. Its relation to the body is not limited by birth and death, and its place in the physical body is not circumscribed by one's experience felt at a particular place, as, for instance, between the eyebrows, due to the practice of devotion made on that center. The supreme state of self-awareness is never absent. It transcends the three states of the mind as well as life and death. So there we have Ramana Maharshi going back to saying it's not located within the body. One of the things that I think is interesting is that you can actually use falling asleep during meditation to learn that awareness is beyond the three states. The three states again being waking, dreaming, and sleeping. If when you are falling asleep during meditation, when you begin to doze, usually what comes in, at least for me, and I assume our experiences are similar in this manner, you know, there's a cloudiness that comes in, you know, you can kind of feel it, you know, you feel yourself getting sleepy before you fall asleep. So what I recommend doing is when that cloudiness begins to come in, look at it like an object and ask, what sees this? Just like a moment ago, I had you close your eyes and you could feel, you know, focus on sensations in the head or the heart or the feet. And you were able to look at those sensations. You were able to identify kind of edges of the sensations where the sensations ended, and yet awareness went on beyond those ends. Therefore, awareness could not be limited to the sensations. You can do the exact same thing when you're falling asleep during meditation. Look at that drowsiness, that cloudiness. Look at it as a sensation. Notice that you can actually see the edges of it. It's like a thing, right? It's like a thing. And set and watch from the observer seat, from awareness, watch the sleepiness. You know, some dream thoughts may begin to come in, right? Watch them without going into them. You stay behind them. And you be aware of the fact that you're aware. And just keep practicing that. You can literally fall asleep to the point that the head goes like this and you wake up without ever losing awareness. Without ever losing awareness, because you got behind it. And you will notice that you were aware even as you fell asleep to the point that the head fell. And so this is how you learn that awareness is actually beyond sleep. You know, most people believe that, you know, when they go to sleep, awareness ends. And that's why Michael Langford in his book says, watch the awareness that wakes up in the morning. He later says awareness doesn't actually wake up in the morning, but that's your experience, right? So since that's your experience, watch the awareness that wakes up in the morning. But what's really fun is to watch awareness as the mind falls asleep. As the mind succumbs to sleep to the point that your head falls, you will notice you never, ever were not aware. And that's pretty cool because that's how you see that awareness really is beyond sleep and beyond the mind. Because what falls asleep is the mind. Right, so you'll see that too. So next time you find yourself falling asleep during meditation, practice that. Get behind it. Notice the sleepiness as an object. Notice the edges. Remind yourself that you can see this. You are aware of this. As the dream thoughts start coming in, keep noticing that you're aware. Just keep noticing that you're aware. Just keep focusing on that. And one of two things will happen. Either focusing on that will cause the sleepiness to just kind of pass. And pretty soon you'll notice all this energy. Or the sleepiness will take over and you'll fall asleep. But you'll notice at the point when that head falls, you'll notice you did not at all lose awareness. You were aware 100% of the time. Right? And you'll notice that the awareness then was beyond the sleep. All right, so let's see what happens next in this conversation. Okay, so we just had the story of Camille, and we were told that the fact that he was able to bring his friend back to life in order to give him back the game he owed him, play the game that he owed him, that this really means that the self is beyond birth and death. That's the moral of that story, and that's a useful moral. The devotee says, since Sri Bhagavan says that the self may function at any of the centers or chakras while its seat is in the heart, is it not possible that by the practice of intense concentration or devotion between the eyebrows, this center may itself become the seat of the self? You guys can probably see why I'm not crazy about this chapter. You know, if you know me very well at all, he's like, oh my goodness. You know, so now we have a devotee who, first of all, keeps insisting that Ramana teaches one thing when I keep hearing Ramana saying another, right? But then he's saying, so if the self is in the heart, can I, through my concentration, move it, right? Move it. Ramana Maharshi says, as long as it is merely the stage of practice of concentration, see how he keeps emphasizing that, although it doesn't get heard. As long as it is merely the stage of practice of concentration, by fixing a place of controlling your attention, any consideration about the seat of the self would merely be a theorization. You consider yourself as the subject, the seer, and the place whereon you fix your attention becomes the object seen. This is merely, and I have to look up another Sanskrit word. This is merely the feeling of deep devotion. Right? This is merely the feeling of deep devotion. And another thing that this word could mean is the contemplation of a personified deity with great emotion. So what that says to me that the word is both is that, you know, if I pick the head, which obviously this devotee wants to pick the head, if I pick the head as what I'm going to focus on, well, that is just my selected location for devotion, right? But the same word means that I could pick Jesus. I could pick Ramana. I could pick Buddha. I could pick, you guys know what Ramana picked? He picked a mountain, Arunachala. I could pick the West Peak or the Big Wall in Levita. And that could be what I focus on, what I devote my attention to, what I choose to love, just to bring myself to a point of concentration, to a point of stillness. You see, all these things are the same, whether it's a position in the body, or whether it's the outward thought of a teacher, or whether it's a place in nature. All that really matters is that I focus on it until the mind becomes still. None of them are the seat of the self, not even Arunachala, right? Even though Ramana Maharshi used that as the symbol of the seat for many, many, many times, right? Even that is not the true seat of the self. The self is beyond all of that. So he says, as long as it is merely the stage of practice of concentration, By fixing a place of controlling your attention, any consideration about the seat of the self would merely be a theorization, a theory. You consider yourself as the subject, the seer, and the place whereon you fix your attention becomes the object seen. This is merely bhavana. And again, bhavana means a feeling of deep devotion. It also means the contemplation of a personified deity with great emotion. This is merely bhavana. When, on the contrary, you see the seer himself, you merge in the self, you become one with it. That is the heart. And Ramana Maharshi does use the word heart in that way. Heart has nothing to do with a place in the body. He uses the word heart to represent truth or true self without any illusion, right? Absence of illusion, absence of the false self. So when, on the contrary, you see the seer himself, you merge in the self, you become one with it, that is the heart. And then the questioner follows that up with this question. Then, is the practice of concentration between the eyebrows advisable? You know, Ramana Maharshi wasn't the type that screamed at people and ran them out of the room like Nisargadatta did, but but maybe that needed to happen in this case. I don't know. Ramana Maharshi says, the final result of the practice of any kind of devotion is that the object on which, I think this again means aspirant, but I'm going to double check to make sure. Yeah, spiritual aspirant. Okay, so the practice of concentration, the final result of the practice of any kind of devotion is that the object on which the aspirant fixes his mind ceases to exist as distinct and separate from the subject. They, the subject and the object, become one self, and that is the heart. The practice of concentration on the center between the eyebrows is one of the methods of practice, and thereby thoughts are effectively controlled for the time being, which means you're not lost in thought when you're concentrating on the space between the eyebrows or the West Peak or a statue of Jesus or anything else that you choose to concentrate on, right? The reason is this. All thought is an extroverted activity of the mind, and thought in the first instance follows sight, physical or mental. It should, however, be noted that this practice of fixing one's attention between the eyebrows must be accompanied by mantra. That's what that word means, mantra, a name of God mantra. So what Ramana Maharshi is saying is that while you're if you're going to focus between the eyebrows, while you focus, you also want to say a mantra like, I am that I am. Because next in importance to the physical eye is the physical ear, either for controlling or distracting the mind. Next in importance of the eye of the mind, that is mental visualization of the object, is the ear of the mind, that is mental articulation of speech, either to control and thereby strengthen the mind or distract and thereby dissipate it. Okay, so here's what I'm hearing in this. Here's the reason for saying the mantra. The reason for saying the mantra is the same as the reason for closing the eyes. The reason most people are advised to close their eyes when they meditate is because if your eyes are open and a bird flies by, the mind goes, oh, a bird. You know? So it's very different. It's kind of like the commercial, or I guess I saw it as a commercial. It was a movie about a dog. You guys remember the dog? I think his master's talking to him or something. The dog's listening. And then a squirrel runs by and he goes, squirrel. And he totally forgets everything his master was saying, right? That's what happens when the eyes are open. We joke at the retreat house. We call it the squirrel effect. Squirrel. When your eyes are open, you get distracted by the things that you see. So you're asked to close the eyes. What Ramana Maharshi is saying is if you focus on the head, I mean, where do you typically experience thoughts? In the head area, right? Well, if you focus on the head, I mean, there's squirrels everywhere. So you're likely to get distracted. Also, you may hear something. You know, he's really talking about, you know, you may hear a dump truck go by and go, oh, dump truck, you know. So what he's recommending then is in addition to closing your eyes, you say a mantra. And the mantra will help you tune your attention away from thoughts and away from sounds. So closing the eyes helps to tune your attention away from sights. The mantra helps to tune your attention away from thoughts and away from sounds. So you focus on, again, this is because he's only recommending this because obviously this devotee wants to focus here, right? So he's trying to help him do it effectively. I wouldn't say that this is really something that Ramana Maharshi is recommending as a general teaching, very specific to this individual. But he's saying that you close your eyes, you focus right here, and then you say the name of God mantra, I am that I am. Keep all of your attention right here and keep saying, I am that I am. And what that's going to do is just take you into concentration. right? Take you away from being lost in thought. And again, he's saying this is just a beginning practice. And he's just helping this individual who is very, very, very clear he wants to practice in this way. Therefore, while fixing the mind's eye on a center, as for instance between the eyebrows, you should also practice the mental articulation of a name mantra, sacred syllable or syllables. Otherwise, you will soon lose your hold on the object of concentration. Practice as described above leads to identification of the name, God's name, capital name, the word, a holy word, or the self, whatever you may call it, with the center selected for the purpose of devotion. Pure consciousness, the true self, or the heart, is the final realization. We have 1 minute left. I'm going to go see if I can just read through this because there's only a couple paragraphs left. Why does not Sri Bhagavan direct us to practice concentration on some particular center of chakra? Ramana says, yoga sastras say that the brain is the seat of the self. Purusa Sukta declares that the heart is its seat. To enable the aspirant to steer clear of possible doubt, I tell him to take up the thread or the clue of I-ness or I-am-ness and follow it up to its source. Because firstly, it is impossible for anybody to entertain any doubt about this I notion. Secondly, whatever practice the aspirant adopted, the final goal is the realization of the source of I-am-ness, which is the primary datum of your experience. If you therefore practice self-inquiry, you will reach the heart, which is the self. So now he's saying, better than any of these things that we've been talking about, and this is the end of the chapter, better than any of these things that we've been talking about, find the I sense and focus on that, right? Better than the physical heart or the imaginary heart, better than a space between the eyes, better than a mantra, you know, better than devotion to a deity, better than any of that, although that's all fine for beginners. Find the I sense and focus on that, because that's what's really going to take you to realization. Thank you, and I'm done. Bye.